Sprint and T-Mobile may become one company to keep up with the competition.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Sprint and T-Mobile are reportedly talking about a merger. They currently lag behind their larger competitors, AT&T and Verizon. T-Mobile and Sprint stock jumped 4% yesterday on rumors of a merger. So what would all of this mean for us cell phone users? Let's bring in Scott Cleland, a telecom analyst with Precursor. Good morning.
Good morning.
So give us the basics. Why would it help these two companies to get together?
Well, there are two big players, AT&T and Verizon, and Sprint and T-Mobile are number three and four. The logic behind this is if you combined T-Mobile and Sprint, they would have more resources in order to provide more to consumers. They'd be able to invest more in their network and be able to get the iPhone and other top products.
Is it all about the iPhone?
I wouldn't say all about the iPhone. I think it's actually about consolidating to have the resources and investment in order to sufficiently compete with AT&T and Verizon.
How would consumers feel a joint Sprint and T-Mobile in the landscape of cell phone service?
Well, I think, you know, long term, they would be getting, you know, more spectrum, they'd be getting more resources. And so I think, you know, consumers of both T-Mobile and Sprint long term would benefit greatly.
What about Verizon and AT&T customers?
They're going to benefit from, you know, a tougher competitor as well. I mean, we have more competition in wireless than almost any country in the world. And some people may look at this and say, you know, is this going to reduce competition? This is a very heavy investment industry, and you have to have the spectrum, and you have to have the infrastructure and the resources to provide a quality service and product. And I think combining makes a ton of sense.
Scott Cleland, a telecom analyst with Precursor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Missouri may become the latest state to turn down federal money because of concerns about the deficit. Some Republican state lawmakers want to send more than $250 million in federal stimulus money back to Washington. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has the story.
Missouri's governor wants to use the stimulus money to extend unemployment benefits and stave off cuts in education funding. But Republican state senators like Will Krause say Missouri should set an example, send the money back, demand that it go toward reducing the federal deficit, and stop using federal money to put off tough budget cuts.
We need to make those tough decisions this year versus punting it down the road.
Other state Republicans say the money would just be rerouted to other states. It wouldn't reduce the deficit. That's what happened when the governor of Florida turned down federal money for a high-speed rail project. Nonetheless, more and more states are refusing some federal funding. Cash-strapped governors are balking at federal grants that require them to chip in or be responsible for cost overruns. Still, most states are not turning away federal money that doesn't come with strings attached. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed across the globe right now. Hong Kong up about 0.4%. London is down slightly. New census data show growth in California is slowing because of high unemployment and the cost of housing. And now, more than half of Californians under the age of 18 are Latino. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow jumped 124 points to close at 12,214. Today, by the way, is 2 years to the day since the stock market bottomed out. The Dow is up 86% since then.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at microsoft.com/cloud. And by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com.
Have you heard of the term green chemistry? It's been around for a couple decades, and it's all about making the stuff we use every day less toxic and less wasteful. Well, now, as Sarah Gardner reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, one of green chemistry's founders is out to prove you can make money with it, too.
John Warner was a top industrial chemist when his 2-year-old son died from a rare birth defect.
Lying awake at night the evening of my son's funeral, staring at the ceiling, asking myself, what if something I touched caused my son's disease? What if something that I got an award for ultimately caused my son's death?
Warner and his friend Paul Anastas developed green chemistry in the 90s. Their idea was that industrial processes don't have to be bad for humans and the environment. They could be benign by design, so to speak. Warner preached that gospel for years as a chemistry professor. Now he's trying to prove green chemistry can work in the real world.
And so in this lab over here, we have people working on large object ceramics.
Ceramics as in bathroom fixtures. Warner now heads a small startup company north of Boston called the Warner Babcock Institute. It helps its clients, from drug companies to cosmetic firms, by coming up with non-toxic, more energy-efficient, and less wasteful ways to make their products. And those clients want to save money by doing it. Warner says that's possible. After all, toxicity carries a pretty high price tag.
Look at the amount of money we spend in hazardous waste. Look at the amount of money in storage. Look at the money in transport. If you have a hazardous material, it just costs so much money.
Warner doesn't divulge his client list or revenues, but says the company has worked with 18 clients so far and is cash positive. Among their successes, reducing the amount of chemical waste from making a Parkinson's disease drug and figuring out a way to use less energy in making solar panels. Oh, and there's the hair dye that's less toxic. And now brown-haired Warner says he's been the lab guinea pig on that one.
This is a chemistry experiment. This isn't a product yet. But, you know, obviously, it's on my head.
In Wilmington, Massachusetts, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, have I got a deal for you. It's a 1902 mansion set on 13 acres in beautiful Sands Point, Long Island. And unless you buy it, it's going to be torn down at the end of the month. It's available now for the low, low price of $30 million. Now, the maintenance costs are around $4,500 a day. But get this. The house was the inspiration for Daisy Buchanan's house in The Great Gatsby. It's the one with the green light at the end of the dock. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter at Jeremy Hobson, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Clinical trials are some of the most important and expensive things that drug companies do, so they're outsourcing.
The number one reason why companies come to Russia is that they can enroll patients in Russia anywhere from 3 to 20 times faster than in either North America or Western Europe.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The doctor is in Moscow. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.